This is
Make It Kind.
M.I.P.
with Masamela Matfumo.
Mark Thompson.
Make It Kind.
Get woke.
All right, folks of Nanwin. We are here on a wonderful and glorious sunny Thursday, wherever you are. Hopefully it's sunny for you as well. God bless you all. Once again, our favorite co-host.
Favorite. Wow.
I don't really have many others. All of my other folks who would be regulars with me have retired, literally. Folks are retired. People have retirement age. So with you and me, we're not working regulars left on Naked Brain. But I'm thankful. He is the founder of DailyCoast.com, the largest online progressive community, and Civics with a Q. And so, of course, we want to start there. First of all, welcome, as always, Marcos. We want to start there. These people are still seeing the polls. No, I take that back. I don't even want to start there. The vice presidential debate.
Ooh.
Now, I have a feeling you'll agree with me that, vice presidential debates are almost never memorable. And I think the only memorable one in history, and of course this one occurred before both you and I were born, was Benson versus Dan Quayle. When he said, "You're no Jack Kennedy." That's the only one people, whenever you do that. But otherwise, I don't think anybody remembers any. No. Maybe Kamala Harris, because it's recent. I'm speaking, when she kept saying that to Mike Pence. What did you think about Tuesday night in Denali?
So, I mean, J.D. Vance is kind of a masterful code switcher, right? He can go from like psychopath talking to right-wing audiences and then play himself off as his moderate, basically, oftentimes describing the Democratic policy and trying to adopt it as his own, right? Like, he would never, ever support a national ban on abortion. Like, this is literally on his website. Don't come at me with that. You know, him claiming that Trump saved Obamacare. Remember that one? That was a good one.
Yeah, we all.
Or him saying that what the U.S. should really be doing is focusing on energy independence, and which is literally the thing that Biden did. The United States is now the largest producer extractor of oil in the world, more than Saudi Arabia. Like, down the list, he kept talking, sounding reasonable because he was adopting reasonable Democratic policies. And that's not the real J.D. Vance. And, you know, you see in the punditry, right, they were wowed, right, by, ooh, like, he's so smooth talking and he's so poised and he's such a good debater. Yeah, it's great. It's easy to win a debate, maybe. And I'm not saying he won a debate, but it's easy to do good in debate when you literally lie your entire way through and you're not actually having to defend Republican policy. And one of the things that struck me very, very early on is that given time and time again the opportunity to defend Donald Trump, he wouldn't. He did not even try to defend Donald Trump because it's indefensible. And he was doing well doing that until the very end, because I don't know why they waited to the end to ask about January 6th. Like, that should have been the first question right off the bat. But they waited to the end, and J.D. Vance was doing well enough. I mean, I think there's, you know, he had this moment where he got outraged because they fact-checked the Springfield, Ohio, and, you know, that was not a good moment for him. But when he was asked about January 6th and J.D. Vance talked about Donald Trump did a peaceful transfer of power, and everybody, including Republicans, probably looking at that going, wait, what? And that was like, I thought the moment of the debate, and you talk about that moment that sticks. And this is what debates used to be. Donald Trump has made a spectacle of every question. But back in the old day, Mark, you know, this is debates were kind of boring. And then you'd have that one moment that would stand out that you're like, oh, that's the moment of the debate. And the moment of this debate was J.D. Vance unable to say that Donald Trump lost in 2020. And when Walz just looked at the camera and said, that is a damning non-response. I forget the exact quote, but that.
Right.
And it was chef's kiss. It was perfect. And I think that moment right there exposed J.D. Vance's BS for what it was. And so the punditry, you know, they're like, ooh, he won because he's so smooth and so confident. kind of amazing that all the polling showed that either it was a draw, partisans basically said their guy won, so, you know, makes sense. But also the focus groups that all the media groups had, like everybody swung for Tim Walz. And I think it has that, you know, it kind of reminded me of 2000 when Al Gore just absolutely wiped the floor with George Bush. And it was clear that Al Gore won the debate, but people actually decided that they liked George Bush better because they'd rather have a beer with him. I mean, that was the thing. I mean, who would you rather have a beer with? I actually think Tim Walz did not win on style points. He was not the best debater per se. It's not clearly it's not his favorite format, but he clearly won the who would you rather have a beer with debate. And for better or for worse, this time it benefited us. So will it have an effect? Probably not. But I think just J.D. Vance's inability to answer the question about 2020 really sort of exposed just how broken and corrupt and putrid that Republican Party is.
There was some snap polling which said that there were some independents and undecideds that liked Tim Walz.
Yeah.
But to your point, you often remind us that most people have already made up their minds. It didn't move anybody, didn't change anybody. And you've also always been one to remind us, and I've always agreed with you over the years, what is an undecided anyway? I don't even understand what, you know, that's, but to the extent that those people exist and like to think of themselves that way, some of them did say they were moved by Walz.
And even if it's a point, this thing is so close that that point may make the difference, right? So every little advantage, I think it's helpful. And there was one of those panels, I think it was, whose panel was it? Can't remember. I think it might've been NBC News, but there was a panel where the bulk of the participants swung to Walz and they all cited that non-answer on 2020. And I think the punditry and people, they desperately want to discount the power of 2020 and the insurgency. I mean, remember in 2022, Joe Biden closed that election with a speech about democracy and about how dangerous we were on the edge of losing our democracy because of Republican insurrection. And everybody's like, oh, Joe Biden missed an opportunity. He flubbed because he should be talking about the economy. Everybody wants to talk about the economy. That's the number one issue with voters is the economy, the economy, the economy, the economy. Democrats won that election. They won that election based on democracy and abortion. And I kept saying, those two issues have not lost their salience in this cycle. In fact, now that we just got Jack Smith's brief unredacted, democracy is back on the agenda. It's back on the menu. And abortion certainly never left that. So everybody's talking, oh, well, everybody wants to talk about inflation. Inflation was at almost 10% in 2022, and Democrats won that election on abortion and democracy. What makes anybody think that those issues have any less salience today when inflation's dipped back down to 2.5%, right? So it is, those issues will play a big role. And J.D. Vance reiterated how incapable Republicans are of coming to terms with just a reality of 2020. And he kept saying, well, I'm looking to the future. No, you're not. Because your guy, Donald Trump, he keeps talking about 2020. And no, we don't get to say, Mark, I got busted, you know, cops pull me over for speeding. I don't get to say like, you know, officer, I'm looking forward to the future. I don't know why you keep harping on the, you know, thing that happened in the past. That's not how it works. And it's not so hard to say Joe Biden won in 2020. It was a close election, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It should not be hard. J.D. Vance, I mean, Donald Trump, we know, can't do it. He's pathologically unable to do it. J.D. Vance is smart enough to know the truth, and he still can't do it because his party does not allow that. His Trump himself, his boss, will let him do it. And I think people notice these things, and it does, it will make a difference. Will it make a difference with the bulk of voters? No. But again, we're looking at the edges. And if there's somebody undecided because, well, you know, maybe they're Republicans, you know, like Liz Cheney, maybe they're Republicans and they're feeling uneasy about about Trump and democracy. And these are the sort of moments that like crystallize, like, yeah, that party is unable to reform and they need to burn it down and rebuild it so we can get back to arguing over how much regulation we should have and how much tax cut billionaires should have. And okay, good. Let's have that debate. Let's everybody complain about how boring politics is, because I want to get to that world again, where that's a big debate as opposed to whether we're going to actually have elections in 4 years.
There was also an issue with some saying that, but they both were really trying to be overly nice, which kind of got on my nerves a little bit. There was even a debate on MSNBC about that. And Joy Reid made a good point. She said to get the base would want Tim Walz to be an attack dog, but obviously the campaign made a decision. They didn't want him to be an attack dog. Go ahead and be nice. Let's get these people on the fence. And the next day a story comes out. Now the debate's going to take the leash back off. I don't know. I mean, the campaign, I'm sorry, is going to take the leash back off. That remains to be seen. But yeah, you know, I think we would have all expected him to go in a little harder. And then obviously, as you alluded to, JD was going out of his way to pretend like, oh, we're all the same. Oh, JD, Tim, your son saw a school shooting. Christ have mercy. I mean, it was just over. And I'm watching it and knowing Trump like we do, you can't tell me Trump wasn't partially pissed.
Oh,
with coming in curious.
Yeah.
JD was doing. I mean, it was surprised that he was doing so much pandering and trying to do so much empathy. I'm surprised his eyeliner didn't start running. But there's that. So yeah, it didn't move many people.
What it did do, it raised both of their favorabilities in multiple polls. Both their numbers went up. Numbers for Tim Walz went up more than they did for J.D. Vance. Now, it could be argued that maybe Democrats would be better served if J.D. Vance remained in the, you know, in the catastrophically unpopular territory, as opposed to just merely unpopular where he's ended up. But I think one of the maybe unintended consequences of that debate is it showed people what it would be like if Donald Trump was not on the scene. And so the question is a civil debate, because it was a civil debate, you know, no matter how much J.D. Vance lied, they were civil to each other. Is a civil debate that's kind of boring? Is that really, because everybody's, oh, we want more policy. I don't think most people want policy. Like, I think they're full of crap. But if you want a civil debate that's more substantive on policy, well, I mean, you kind of got that. And if the contrast between that and Donald Trump's chaos and hatred and division was pretty, pretty stark. And yes, J.D. Vance hit it. But there's kind of a seemed refreshing that we didn't have to deal with somebody who's just literally like being racist and sexist and misogynist to our face while people cheered him on. And so to me, it was a bit of a respite from that. And I think that contrast does not play well for Donald Trump and his ticket, because I even Republicans, I think, might have looked at that and said, okay, that's a little more, yeah, it's, can deal with that a little bit more than dealing with Trump's. Because I think at this point, even Republicans are over Donald Trump. And they're just tolerating him because he's been driven up into a frenzy about what a communist Kamala is and all that other nonsense. In the end, Mark, I would suspect, and I don't think I've seen a poll on this in a while, but I would bet you pretty much anything that Republicans are far more okay with losing than Democrats are, because they have nothing at stake. We have everything at stake. We have our democracy at stake. What do they have at stake? Oh no, they're going to have a better economy, another Democratic president who knows how to be competent. Like, they don't lose anything in a Democratic administration while Donald Trump is talking about deporting legal immigrants. So this is the world we live in. And believe it or not, that has an impact on who votes, because they, you know, if they don't have much to lose with a Democratic administration, because they know they really didn't lose much with the Biden administration. And there's less reason for them to turn out if things are difficult. There's least, you know, less reason to turn out, period. Especially if they convince themselves more and more that it's in their interest to get rid of Donald Trump from the national scene and they can rebuild the party. And they might want to even rebuild the party around J.D. Vance, and then we have to deal with him in 4 years. But we are motivated because we know what's at stake, and in a way that they are not. So the polling is very close and looking good, but close, but in a way that really puts us in the driver's seat and but doesn't just put Kamala Harris on the path to winning the election. But if we really work hard, it could be a blowout. I still believe very firmly that's in a realm of possibility, not probability, not it's going to happen, not stop working. We got this, because we don't. But I don't see anybody that's putting the foot off the pedal. Like, everybody is so incredibly motivated and working so hard right now. And as long as we keep doing that, like, we are in a good place right now.
So let's get into some of these polls. That's part of your expertise. During the week, folks, Marcos and I share tweets and information with each other. Even the venerable Cook Political Report seems to agree with you. She's up in all the battlegrounds by the slimmest of margins. And it looks like you were the first one to say that Michigan and Wisconsin were looking very good. And it looks like the other polls are coming online to say that now. So just to refresh everyone, when we earlier said Marcos was, when he said Michigan and Wisconsin were looking very good, and we went on ahead and counted Michigan and Wisconsin in our map to get to 251. So if that's true, we're at that 251. And the other argument he made holds, you know, still holds true. You're then talking about North Carolina, Arizona, Nevada, and Georgia. If you don't get Pennsylvania, you won't need Pennsylvania if you get two of those others. But let's get to that. Michigan and Wisconsin, people say those are looking good. In fact, she's speaking in Wisconsin at 5. And if I can, folks, stay tuned on all of our social media channels, because I will stream it live if I'm able to do it. But how are we looking in those other five battlegrounds? North Carolina, Virginia, North Carolina, Georgia.
Arizona, Michigan. The best way to look at polling is to look at the aggregates. It's not to look at any one individual poll, but to look at sort of the averages of all of them. And what we're consistently seeing in pretty much all of those states is a 2-3 point Harris lead. Now, that does not sound like a lot, but I'm talking dozens of polls showing 2-3 point Harris lead. That means it's a real lead. Like, everybody's showing it. It's pretty consistent. And here's the difference with what 2-3 points means, right? Quite almost all of these battleground states, Harris, Georgia's the only one, I think, right now that Trump in the aggregate still has a very, very, like, 1 point lead. But we're talking the typical lead in these states is about 49-46, 49-47, right? So Kamala 49, Trump 46-47, sometimes 48. Okay, you may say, okay, that's only 2 points. But the difference is Harris is 1 point away from 50. It might not even need to get to 50 because of third party, you know, Kennedy, you know, and the libertarian candidates and right. Whatnot. So Trump is 46, 47. He's got to make up 3-4 points to overcome Harris. Mark, he has not gained support anywhere. He has not grown his base of support the entire last 4 years. He's, in fact, it's actually shrunk. His older, whiter, COVID skeptical people are dying in larger numbers just because of demographics, because of COVID itself. He has alienated college-educated white suburban voters, particularly women. He has alienated Republican women, even out in the boonies, to the point where it's starting to cut a little bit into his rural margins. So it's, you raised 2 to 3 points. I'm, you know, but, it's so close. It is close. But Mark, she doesn't have to go further. And she has been in an upward trajectory the entire time. And so I wrote about this Cook political string of polls over the battleground states, which again showed what I just said, you know, Harris, you know, 49 to 50% and Trump, you know, sitting at 47, 48%. But what it also found was in other questions is what I got really excited about, right? So on inflation, Donald Trump used to have a 6-point lead on inflation. Everybody thought, oh, it's inflation. It's even now. Both candidates are seen equally on the issue of inflation. That means it's no longer an advantage for Trump. That was it, Mark. And immigration is an entire case, right? So inflation, off the table. People don't like his tariffs. Just 38% of voters think that the tariffs would drop prices. So that's his signature economic proposal. They don't like the tariffs. The economy, fewer people say it, there's been a 24-point net swing on the economy, where back in May, 38% of those swing state voters thought the economy was better or staying the same. 62% said it was getting worse. That's now an 8% margin. So now it is, where are we? I didn't write it in here. But what used to be a 24-point difference, now it's only an 8-point difference. And that matters, because people who think the economy is getting worse are very overwhelmingly Trump supporters, right? So again, the economy neutralized. Trump, his biggest advantage on any issue is on immigration, 51-42. You know, Trump has a 51% lead to 42, but that's a 5-point drop from what he had in August, which was 53-39. So again, Harris is shrinking that margin, and Republicans are mocking Harris for going to the border last week. I lost track of time, but she just went to the border. They were like freaking out. Mark, it's working. People are like, okay, she's engaged. I think the argument that Trump sabotaged the immigration deal, I think that's finally landing. And again, this is an issue that, one of the two issues he had an advantage of, immigration and inflation. I don't think, Mark, honestly, I don't think anybody's voting on immigration. That's not the thing that's going to motivate any voters. Because they've been running on, you've seen this, they've been running on migrant caravans for how long now? And they keep losing election after election after election. It's just.
Allegedly, Ruben Gallego is saying that's why she's underwater in Arizona.
He might be. He's crushing it, though, on immigration. And he's pro-immigration Democrat. And he's beaten Carrie Lake by like 15 points right now in some of these polls. So I don't think, I think people may find an excuse. And by the way, underwater, this poll has Harris leading Arizona 50-47. So in the aggregate, again, it's now,
which poll is that now? Is that yours or
this Cook? This is a Cook. No, Cook. It's so this Cook is a poll, yeah, I'm looking at. So so immigration, Trump has an advantage, but it's shrinking. And then here's a big one, is that more people now think that Harris is going to win than Trump. And Republicans invest a lot of energy and time and money trying to build this era of inevitability.
Right.
Because they think it does. It motivates people if you're going to win. Like, you know, people, if you go to a football game, baseball, you stick around if your team is winning. If your team's getting blown out, you leave early. Right? You're going to be traffic. Nobody wants to see your team lose. So they are so invested in this that they literally have pollsters whose entire job is to alter the polling averages. I just said, look at the polling averages. They have pollsters that literally what they do is they come in with these ridiculous pro-Trump samples to influence those polling averages, because they want to create that narrative. They want Nate Silver to be like, oh yeah, Trump's going to win. And which is totally different than us, right? We're always looking for reasons we're going to lose. Right? Oh, no. So just keep in mind, Donald Trump right now is down 2 to 3 points. That is where Joe Biden was before we collectively as Democrats, not me and you, but we collectively as Democrats lost our minds and pushed him out of the race. Trump is worse off now. We lost our minds being down 2. They're acting like they're winning being down 3 in average. And then the other thing that they point out, Mark, is something that we've talked about multiple times, is that Trump nationally still cannot grow his support he cannot hit 47% of support nationally. He is absolutely maxed out. And I just mentioned that earlier, right? Like his core base is shrinking. Is he going on 60 Minutes to try to reach a wider audience? Of course not. He just said he's not going to do that. But he's on Fox News. He's on Newsmax. He's going on right-wing podcasts. He keeps talking to the same people over and over again. He already has those people. He is incapable of trying to expand that base. And things like picking Nikki Haley as his VP, that itself could have been worth a couple points. But might be a totally different campaign right now. But he is incapable of doing that. And so this polling once again shows that his national ceiling is still at 46%. And yeah, battleground states are different, right? Because that's why they're battlegrounds. They're more evenly matched. But if he cannot grow that national percent of national vote, he's not growing his percentage of the vote in those states. So if he's already stuck at 46, 47, how is he going to get to 50? Kamala, she's less well-known. She's moved up quite a bit. One of the most amazing political feats I think I may have seen in the last decade is how she has improved her favorability ratings to now she's in net positive territory. That is unprecedented in our current national politics where everybody's unpopular, right? Because Democrats hate Republicans, Republicans hate Democrats, and independents hate everybody. So it's really hard for any politician to be net positive favorabilities. That means more people like them than don't like them. Kamala Harris has pulled that up, and her numbers are still improving. This is not tapered off, right? So she needs to get from 49 to 50. I think she's got Mark. And even in Georgia, where it's like 48, 47, where in this poll, at least, not in the aggregates, in this poll, Trump is leading in Georgia. Let me see. It is, 48, 47 Trump. Harris has a path to get to 50 in a way that Trump, adding those extra 2 points does not. That does not include, Mark, we've talked about this, I think, last week. Polling cannot tell us. Polling is as much an art as it is a science, because we don't know what percentage of young people are going to vote, what percentage of old people, what percentage of Black, voters and Latino voters. We don't know that. So pollsters can only guess based on historical trends. So we know that a Black woman is 94% Harris, 4% Trump. We know that. We don't know how many of them will turn out, right? If they were 50% of the electorate, Harris wins by a million, right? If they are 1% of the electorate, in trouble. So historically, I think they've been around 6% of the electorate. So even if you get them up to 8% of the electorate, boom, like that's worth points. So we don't know that. So the polls just basically can tell us where white people are, where Black people and Latinos, that's what they can tell us. If we nail the turnout, that's when we're talking about a landslide. So the polls just tell us that in a historically average turnout year, Harris is winning. Mark, we ain't got one of those. We ain't got a historically average turnout year. This is going to be something completely different.
Yeah.
So now what does that look like? Will Trump get more of his white rural people out to vote that maybe he didn't last time? Like, we can't assume that he won't. It just ain't going to be normal. I'm telling you right now. So that's why we got to keep working really hard, because we work really hard. We make sure we negate the possibility of another Trump vote surge. Because he did. He got 6 million more votes in 2020 than he did in 2016. It just so happened that Biden got 8 million more votes than Hillary Clinton did. That was the difference that election, right? So we have to outwork them, and right now we are outworking them. They don't even have a field operation. They put that on Elon Musk. What does Elon Musk know about building a field operation? So
they don't have a field operation.
Kamala is raising almost three times as much money as Donald Trump. Well, Trump's got enough money. He's got $200 million in the bank for the last month, so it's not like he's poor. But Harris has so much money that she can expand into Florida and Iowa and Ohio if she wanted to. Just to just to help, even if to help our Democratic senators, because at this point, I don't think she's got enough. I don't think she could spend more money on Pennsylvania, on these battlegrounds. So maybe she can do that to help out Texas, to help out Senate candidates in Texas and Florida. So there's a lot of opportunities that Harris has that Trump doesn't have just because she has more money than she'll ever possibly be able to spend. But Mark, that money also means excitement. So in September, Donald Trump raised $88 million less than he did in September of 2020.
Yeah.
That is grassroots excitement.
Yeah. And these are small dollar donations. This isn't.
Yeah. He's doing small venues. He's doing small venues. He'll claim that there's 50,000 people sitting
on. No, I'm talking about her, though. I'm talking about her money.
Oh, yeah.
Is small dollar donations.
Yeah.
A lot.
No, and it's just a sign of engagement. So when you talk about like, oh, people are going to take it easier, they're going to put the foot off the pedal. No, they're not. They're not. They know what's at stake because it is existential for us. It is not existential for Republicans. That was my argument why Joe Biden would have won. But it would have looked a lot different. It would have been a lot more painful. And we would have been beyond much more stressed than we already are. I mean, just realistically. But I think Joe Biden would have won for the exact same reason that I think Kamala Harris, and he would have won narrowly, for the reason I think Kamala Harris has a real good chance of winning big. So, particularly in a popular vote, it's going to be a blowout in the popular vote for all that. I mean, obviously it doesn't matter, but I think things, I mean, we're just a little bit over a month away, Mark, and Trump is unable to change the dynamics of the race.
Yeah.
So all this polling that shows her up 2 to 3 points might not have been as important 6 months ago, a year ago. A lot of time for things to change. What's going to change people's opinion at this point, Mark?
Yeah.
Everybody's locked in. So it's just a question of who turns out to vote. And we have a lot more on the line. So our people are going to vote. They're going to vote big.
In terms of moving those small percentages of those who have not made up their mind, what does Jack Smith's latest brief? Well, let me ask you two topics. Jack Smith's latest brief, does that have an impact?
The second
topic is, does Netanyahu trying to literally take us into World War III have an impact? Because he seems pretty intent on doing it.
Yeah, I mean, no, Netanyahu doesn't, it's not affecting our domestic politics. So the Jack Smith brief that was just unsealed, it won't make a difference in the top lines. What it will do is it will solidify the anti-Trump coalition. Mm-hmm. So any of those college-educated suburban white women, and again, I'm seeing hints that white men as well, not to the extent of women, of course, but I think they're starting to move a little bit. This gives them another reason not to go back to Trump. And maybe they were never going to go back to Trump, but you know what? Keep adding to the pile, right? And what it does also mean is that now Trump is going to spend the next 3-4 days, next week probably, screaming about witch hunt. And again, he's not setting the terms of the debate. So it's better for us if he's screaming about, you know, Jack Smith and being deranged than if he's actually going after Haitian immigrants in Springfield, Ohio, or quite frankly, anywhere else. So so again, it eats up news cycles, and there's not a lot of news cycles left. So maybe it'll have an impact, and I'll be surprised. But I actually think people already know that he's a crook, and anybody that was motivated by that has already made a decision. So it just sort of reinforces like, oh, yeah, that's right. He's a freaking crook. Now, I will say people voted in 2020 based on democracy. They voted in 2022 based on democracy. This also sort of elevates the salience of that issue, which really works well coming on the heels of the DP debate where J.D. Vance was unable to say that Trump lost the 2020 election. So it feeds into that narrative. Again, will it move numbers? I don't think so. Will it lock in the numbers? Probably. And right now the numbers look pretty good for us. So locking in actually is where we want to be.
Lastly, you did write about something that you think will impact Trump. Your headline, RFK Jr.'s alleged womanizing threatens Trump. Does it really?
Oh, my God. So, RFK is freaking hilarious, right? So he was recruited by Steve Bannon and a group of Republican millionaires and billionaires to run against Joe Biden in the Democratic primary to create chaos, right? Steve Bannon, he's a chaos agent, right? He just thought it would eat away at Joe Biden's approval numbers to have another Democrat attacking him. Democrat in scare quotes. It didn't work, right? Because we're not idiots. We're not Republican voters. Like, we looked at Kennedy, and he had a moment where he was like at 10% of the polls, but it didn't last very long because as soon as he opened his mouth, he was anti-abortion. He's a conspiracy theorist. He's anti-vaccine. You know, he's just like the worst of the worst. And that's not even getting into his like womanizing, right? So it was just like Democrats really wanted nothing to do with him. He was tossed aside to the fringes. And him and his Republican buddies decided that he would run for president as an independent and get him on the ballot. And even if he took like a couple of points from Biden in these key battlegrounds, that was going to be enough to hand the election to Trump. That was always the plan. So that didn't turn out working out because as polling started showing, and this is, I was never worried. I was on Meet the Press and everybody's like, ooh, like Kennedy's such a danger. And I was like, he's going to take more from Trump, guys. Like, just look at his pot, like, where's it? He was going on Steve Bannon's show. He was going on all these right wing podcasts and going on Newsmax and Fox News. Like, he wasn't talking to Democrats. So he was very effectively, eventually, he started eating into Donald Trump's margin. And when you started looking at polling, he would take, 1 point from Democrats, 2 points from Trump. And again, in a close election, that 1 point was devastating. So finally, they realized it wasn't working. Like, they spent over $100 million, Mark, over $100 million to realize that he was after hurting Trump. So then he quit the race and he endorsed Trump. And I don't know if you remember, Mark, some of you might, but like 3 weeks ago when he dropped out, like J.D. Vance was sort of tossed aside, right? Everything was Kennedy, 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 and Trump hanging out with Kennedy. And it seemed like Kennedy was the new vice president nominee. And again, I'm not sure what they thought that got them, but they made a big show of it. Now, turns out that Kennedy had some sort of romantic entanglement with Olivia Nuzzi, who was a reporter at New York Magazine, who was engaged to Ryan Grimm, I think, from Politico. And where she was sending him explicit pictures. And I mean, he's quite clearly a predator. Now, news comes out that he's done this with at least three other women at his organization. And so this got people to start looking back to his first marriage when he actually kept a diary where he basically wrote down all of his infidelities, exactly what he was doing with them. And his first wife found that. And that, in addition to some depression and mental health challenges, she ended up dying by suicide. And he's the same person. Like, he's a predator. I will never understand these women, what they see in him. Maybe it's just the name, but it's crazy. And and he made all of them believe that they were the only one, even though he's married. And so now suddenly there's a report in Mediaite that the Trump campaign wants to distance themselves from him because he brings attention to Trump's own infidelities. So they just spent $100 million to basically hurt Donald Trump electorally. And now even by association, he seems to be hurting the Trump efforts. So he's been tossed aside because he's now a liability. And, if your ethics and morality are a liability to Donald Trump, you have unlocked some new level of accomplishment, right? Like, and because RFK may be the one person in this country that gives Trump a run for his money on being the most morally degenerate person in the world.
Unbelievable.
So that was fun. I've been laughing about it. And as you know, like, he sued Daily Kos to try to unmask the identity of a critic of a random Daily Kos community member who wrote a random post story based on German news articles about Kennedy speaking at a Nazi rally, which is weird because I also wrote about it and he didn't sue me. He sued to unmask a random person on the internet. The case is making its way through the courts. We've been beating him at every step. And he tried to get out of it. He tried to get out of it and just drop the case. And we actually fought him on that. And the New York State Appeals Court shot him down unanimously because we're going after him for money and we're going after him to set new legal protections that protect media organizations from this kind of doxing behavior. You see lawsuits to try to harm the First Amendment.
He's trying to get out of the case.
Yeah.
Like trying to get out of being on the ballot in these states where it hurt Trump.
And to get on the ballot in states where like New York. He was trying to get on the ballot in New York. It's weird. Like, he's trying to get off where it might hurt Trump in the battlegrounds, trying to get on in other states to.
Is Cheryl his wife still with him?
From all indications.
Cheryl is a legitimate stalker. And I've seen you all. I know Robert. At one time, we would have considered one another friends. He introduced me to Cheryl. I'm out somewhere one night. He said, "Mark, give him a Cheryl. I want you to meet Cheryl." We were just in a place, having to be in the same place one night. And I'm just like shocked. And just because at one time I considered him a friend, I felt some obligation to at least invite him on the show. And he may really be a friend of mine. You know what he did? He said, "Okay, I'll get back to you." And he didn't do it. Like, he kind of did me a favor. But he can't say I didn't offer him. You know what I'm saying? I'm kind of relieved because I'm sure all he was keeping the hell out of me. And he might have really did a friend thing for me. So I'm not going to let Mark get beat up.
Yeah.
So I'm not going to go on the show. I don't know. I don't know whether that was his thinking because I'm sure he would want to be on any and every platform. But it's bizarre. You know, We would kind of, let me tell you something. He would tell me how much his mother, how proud his mother was of me when I would be on television doing interviews and stuff and talking about civil rights issues. He said, "Mark, Mom loved that. Mom loves you." I mean, that was good. It's Ethel Kennedy. You know, that's nothing more edifying than that. And then now what is all this? This is crazy. You don't even know what to...
I mean, brain worms are like a really likely excuse. I mean, if you literally had worms eat part of your brain, it changes you. Because he wasn't. I mean, he was always a womanizing. I mean, he was a cocaine addict. He overcame that. You know, he had obviously his tragic childhood and his father being murdered, and so he's gone through some shit for sure.
Right.
But what he's
tragic deaths throughout the family.
Yeah,
it's your family problem.
But what he's become is the travesty. I mean, it really is.
Well, he and Cheryl are still married. I'm curious.
They're still married. They're still married, and from all indications, nothing has come out where she's left them. But Jesus, like, it's getting and so what he seems to be doing is he seems to be love bombing them with texts. And just making them feel like the center of the world. And these women all get all...
And he's a Kennedy.
And he's a Kennedy. And they get caught up in the whole fairy tale of it all. And he's just doing this to a bunch of women. So at least four. At least four. Olivia Nuzzi basically threw away her engagement and threw away her career for him. I mean, it's just like he's got some power. Like he's definitely got some superpower. I just wish he would use it for good as opposed to clearly he's using it for evil right now to destroy people's lives.
Cuckoo Camelot. is what this is. It's something else.
Yeah.
All right, folks. DailyCoast.com. Subscribe if you're not keep up. Where, you know, there's always a lot going on. The news you can do something about. All right. Marcos, as always.
And if you want, go to Daily Coast on Saturday. And I have a weekly roundup of all the polling now that runs. It's on the site almost all of Saturday. So
okay,
it's a state of the race. So you can see where everything is in that moment. And right now, things are looking pretty good. So it'll make you feel good. And it'll motivate you to go out and knock on some doors and write some postcards and make some phone calls for Kamala and the Democrats.
Just for y'all, I can't resist. Someone commented on Twitter watching us live. Violeta Flores writes, Governor Walz's knockout punch, she agrees with you, at the end of the debate, would have ended the debate at the beginning if it was made then. Regardless, I'm going to show this on the screen. Regardless, he knocked JD TFO. Now, y'all know I'm a seminary. I had to explain something kind of colorful the other day. I'm not going to explain what TFO stands for. I'm hoping you all.
And I'm happy to explain it. Will it get you in trouble?
Please, we may explain it. TFO.
Okay, knock them the fuck out. There we go. See, now you're innocent.
I mean, I just shared it on the screen. Yeah, no, right. If he had done that,
the first question should have been, why are you sitting here and not Mike Pence? That should have been the first question. And yeah, that question would have totally transformed sort of the dynamic of the debate. But in the end, you know, not a lot of people watched the debate. People are watching the clips afterwards. And so more people saw that clip, you know, on TikTok and on Instagram Reels and Twitter than they ever would have seen it live. Yeah. So all good in the end. All good.
But I have to say this, and it will go. If we were going to play a little nice game and the civil game, you know what I would have done? And I think you're going to love this. I would have said, you know, JD, I'm worried about you. The last vice president.
I already love this.
The last vice president he had, he tried to get lynched. I'm worried for you and your family. I mean, I would have. I'm telling you. Wouldn't that have been great?
I 100% would have loved that.
Thanks, Marcus.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, man.
Appreciate you. Catch you next week.
All right.
Thanks for getting woke and listening to Make It Plain. As always, perform an act of kindness on behalf of an elder or young person. Write a letter to a sister or brother who just so happens to find her or himself incarcerated. Offer libations to the ancestors upon whose sturdy shoulders we all now stand. And above all, give thanks to the God of your understanding by whatever name you call her and him. All God asks of us is that we give each other love. Thanks for giving MIP love. And please remember to subscribe and give us a 5-star rating. If all hearts and minds are clear, it has been made plain.